So, the spring game is almost here, but we hope you pretend we're football for the next hour. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear and Tim Preston, as always. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel, which you can find on any podcasting platform out there. Today we're going to be going over basically everything we've missed over the past week, which is the Colorado whooping, the TCU whooping, and then Texas making it to the final four for the NIT and the championship for the NIT. And if that run in the NIT makes up even a little bit for the season that Shaka Smart had, and if the Shaka Smart math has changed at all. But before we do that, we got to go and do our pretend you're getting to know us, because that's what we do. So this week's pretend you're getting to know us is pretend we're football, and everybody play along with us here. Pretend we're football. What did you think you were good at until you watched somebody else do it? We'll start off with Tim. What did you think?
Well, there's a litany of things that I could talk about sports-wise that I thought I was good until I encountered someone who was truly good. But maybe one of the most standout-ish experiences from my youth that is not sports-related. My seventh grade year, I qualified for the state spelling bee.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed
getting your childhood dreams crushed real early on.
Yeah, man. I was so proud when I qualified for that. The winning word was diphtheria in my county. I spelled that one right because the girl that I was hand fucking, and by that I mean holding hands in the hallway at school, her dad was a doctor, so I knew diphtheria from that. Anyways, so I went to the state spelling bee, and when you were there, there were a few different things you could do. So first thing they did is they had everyone that qualified in this big room, and they would have you take a paper spelling test, and they would like call out the words and tell you like where the words were from, like what the origin of the word was, what its definition was, using a sentence. And then if you got past that, they had like another kind of round that then led to you being on the stage, right? So I was all excited like to take the test, and then after that we were going to go up on the stage eventually. And took that test and got like 4 out of the 50 words right. Like I got almost none of the words right. And the words were just ridiculous, absolutely stupid words that I had because I was not good at spelling. What I was good at was memorizing things that I knew. And so if I saw a word, I memorize it. But these people were like legit good at spelling. Like, you know, there were other 13-year-olds who actually studied, and I thought I was good at spelling. I am not. I'm good at memorizing those words. And, you know, but I will say that having seen the kids who were truly good at spelling, I'm going to go ahead and say I'm glad that I'm not, because I'm way happier than they are and a decent amount skinnier.
Jim, how close were you to being on ESPN?
So if every county in America had a champion,
not close. The answer is
not even remotely close. I got 4 out of 50 right on that.
Oh my god!
May well have taken last in the entire state as far as like the county champions.
So for my high school, we have the superlatives, and one of them, one of our superlatives,
superlatives.
Was who's the most likely in the class to be on ESPN? Now, usually it was going to like the most athletic guy, so it wasn't me. But it would be hilarious if it was just the guy who could spell the best speller in the class.
That
one nerdy Indian kid in the corner just wins it because they're like, oh, he's going to be on that spelling bee.
What was that? That chick who, it was around the time I was in college, who's just screaming, like, ah! Ah! And then the guy's like, yeah, that's correct, when she wins the national spell. Oh, gosh. Anyways, I almost
so,
for
Johnny,
sure.
What about you, man?
So, I feel like I probably have at least as long a list of things that I thought I was good at, but got crushed early in life, like Tim.
Is it? Let me go ahead and spoil your thunder. Is it DJing?
No, no. Although
is it coding?
I do. Yeah, I do. No, I know. I'm terrible at coding. That is definitely not something I think I'm good at. DJing, I do know people who are significantly better at it than I am, though. That is for sure. Look, I'm not great at triathlons. I do okay. Like I'll do all right in my age group, even though it's like a crazy competitive age group, and those guys, the guys who win, tend to win the whole race. And I've been doing them for, I don't know, 12 years now, give or take. And about 2 years ago, a DJ buddy of mine, he got into them. And he's a very nice guy. He's always been, you know, very friendly. He would ask me for advice and stuff. I was happy to help him. And in less than a year, he started completely whipping my ass at all of the races we entered.
Basically the things you were supposed to be good at to impress the guy, he just kicked your ass.
Yeah. He was always like, oh yeah, you know, thanks for that advice. It was like, he might as well have been saying it as he was passing me on the bike. Like, thanks for the help, you know?
He's a fucking fuck is what you're trying to say.
Yes, he is. He is absolutely. Because, it was after, like, there was some 10K we both were at that I beat him at, and like very early on. And then he started doing the triathlons. And I think the first one I saw, the first one we were both at, I'm quietly inside like, I need to whip his ass. I really need to whip his ass at this. And he
shows up. Have you ever told him? Does he listen to the show?
No, he definitely doesn't listen to the show. It was obvious at the end of that race that I was not pleased by the outcome. I was very as gracious as I could be, but I'm a terrible loser. So it was really more of a, yeah, good work. You only been doing this a year, huh? That's pretty great. You really got a knack for it. And inside I'm like, fuck, are you a fucking fuck? You know? And he's now like top 10% of his in the world in his age group, and like just light years beyond me. And it wasn't until, I don't know, after that first race or another one, when I found out that, oh, in high school he was like a two sport athlete that was varsity in both sports. He just sort of didn't feel like doing it anymore. And so like now he walks around and he's like, you know, he's got like a six pack, even though he's 40. He's like one of those fucking guys. And you're like, you're like, I hate you so much. And he's nice, so I can't really hate him, but I hate him more because I can't hate him. Like, it's that kind of thing. Yeah.
Plus, you share two like big things in your life that you like music.
Yeah, and he's better at both of them. Like, he's really legitimately better than me at both of those. And so, yeah. I don't know. I can grow hair better than him. That's what I got. He's so bald as hell. But, yeah.
This pretending you're getting to know us should have been, who are the fucking fucks in your life?
Yes.
We want to know about the fucking fucks in your life.
Yeah. Yes. Fuck you, James. You're a very nice person, but fuck you. I'll see you soon. Yeah. You know?
Well, the fucking fuck in my life was my high school teacher. Because I used to think I was pretty good at foosball. I still think I'm all right at foosball. I mean, come on, look. For those in the picture who you can't see shoulder. Me, which is everybody who's listening, over my left shoulder, right, there's a foosball table. So
yep.
I'm okay at foosball. Like, I could, you know, go to a bar and kick some random guy's ass and feel good about myself because I'm good at foosball, and that's something to be proud of. But then I decided, you know what, I'm going to take on my Spanish teacher, because why not? And so we start off, and I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, I'm playing with my friend here, and he's playing alone. We're going to kick his butt. Little did I know, he's a foosball world champion and proceeds to kick the living shit out of me and my friend in a game of foosball And it's like he's not even trying. It was like he's not even trying.
You ran into the Diego Maradona of foosball?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's from Spain. It's like, they all play. Yeah, you're out. And I went to Spain a year later, and it was just like, yeah, everybody plays foosball here. It's unreal. It's in every bar, and all the kids are playing it. No wonder this guy kicked my ass. And it's a lot harder. They played a lot more difficult than we do in the United States. It's weird. But, yeah, that was a nice slap to the face of, all right, you cocky little 10th grader, get your shit together.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am from Basque. Yeah. Okay, so quick side note. Do they have – we call it – all right, so when I was a child, I remember shuffleboard being this thing where you had, like, this big long stick and you would, like – push like these little discs across a way. Okay, but there's also a game called shuffleboard, like that you played on a big long table, and you throw these little metal discs.
Oh yeah, the little metal discs. Yeah, I've seen both of those. Yes.
Do they have that there in Texas? Is that like a thing in Texas too?
Well, I'm sure there is the shuffleboard with the like on the ground thing somewhere because there are old people somewhere.
And I've seen it here. Yeah, but I don't know if it's a thing.
I have seen the other one in some bars here and there.
Okay. So that's an Iowa. So, yeah, so it sounds like, is there a foosball table at a lot of bars? Like,
are you saying you're going to like come down from Iowa and just whip our ass with the table shuffleboard? Is that what this is?
No. Well, just like I don't know that I can think of a single bar in Iowa that I've seen a foosball table at in – I mean, I don't go to bars, generally speaking. Like,
well, that might be the reason you've never seen a foosball table there, because that's fair. You haven't been to one.
Yeah, you know what? I can't argue that. So, yep. Okay. So, Colorado. I bet Colorado has good foosball bars.
Yeah, definitely. Colorado. Speaking of foosball, let's talk about Colorado. Y'all. Texas absolutely dominated Colorado in a rematch of the old Big 12. And I'm sure that's what that game was billed as for sure, because everybody remembers the good old days when Texas and Colorado played each other in basketball. So Texas comes up the gate 44-19 and just kicking the crap out of Colorado in front of a grandstand of maybe 1,500 people.
No, they said there was about 4,000 there.
Oh, really?
Which just seems about believable.
So then you have that because that's the official number.
Yeah.
And that's what you get. So, all right. Yeah. So the game, they kind of took a little turn for the worse at the beginning of the second half and just kind of went back and plateaued to, okay, this is okay.
Yeah.
What are y'all's general thoughts on that Colorado game? Is there anything to take away from it? Any thoughts? Just a good old clean... ass whooping.
Yeah, it was nice to beat some Colorado ass. Because there was
in more ways than one. What?
yes. Thank you, Will.
was that the joke?
Yeah, no.
Okay. Cool.
No,
I'm glad.
No.
I'm here for the comedy. That's my part.
You're the host / whipping boy. That's how this works. So turn your mic off.
oh my god! No,
it was nice to beat Colorado convincingly, because when they were in the Big 12, they were a pretty solid school here and there. They had some good teams. They were competitive. Not necessarily every year, but they were definitely better than they've been in the SEC for the most part. Pac-12. Excuse me. That's how non-competitive they've been. I thought they were in a different conference.
Colonial.
Yeah, yeah. They really haven't done much in the Atlantic Sun this year. I'm kind of surprised. It was good to see Texas execute that well offensively, because it wasn't like they were shooting lights out. I mean, they shot well. It was a good shooting performance, but they were just executing so well that Colorado did not stand a chance after about, what, 6-8 minutes in. Like, there was a point where it was like 13-12, something like that, and then Texas just turned on the jets, and It was really nice. You know, the second half was a little concerning in its way because you saw sort of the downturn that you tend to see from Texas from time to time, where offensively they just did not come out nearly as crisp in the second half. But fortunately, their defense was good enough that it didn't matter. Ultimately, it got a little nerve wracking for a couple minutes, but frankly, Colorado could not hit the broadside of a barn. Partly because they weren't hitting shots, and partly because Texas was forcing them into suboptimal shots. Overall, it's just it was yet another data point in this tournament of Texas really playing. They weren't playing down to the level of their competition. They were playing the game they needed to play to post a convincing victory.
Yeah, true. And I think it was a question of it would have been difficult for Colorado to come off of their game. I think, okay, so the Colorado game was for Texas was on a Tuesday. Is that right?
Yeah, Colorado had one less day to prepare than Texas did.
Right, and they had to travel.
Yeah.
So I think Colorado played on like a Sunday evening and then beat whoever they were playing and then had to travel to Austin. And they looked it. Like, they looked tired. They looked overwhelmed. We did a good job in that game the entire NIT, we've done a good job of what we call blowing up ball screens, which just means that defensively, our big, for the most part, it's been Jericho, but Royce and Dylan have done a nice job of it too. But our big men have done a nice job of what we call showing, right? So the ball screen happens, and the big man for Texas who was checking, like the person who's screening for the other team, tries to cut off the ball handler to keep the ball handler from either what we call turning the corner to get into the lane or splitting the screen. And we did a terrific job of that. And once we kind of set the tone with that defensively, Colorado was like, well, you got us. we had nothing else. And so Texas, I thought,
how did they know we'd pick and roll?
Curses. So it was good. You know, we matched their lack of energy with a pretty decent amount of our own. And then that, you know, obviously that first half, where it was like 30-6 or something like that, whatever the run was enough to get it done. So I was pleased with how they played. Like everyone else, the first 7 or 10 minutes or whatever it was of the second half was like, here we go again. But they kind of picked it up. And look, I will go back from this standpoint. So Texas, they are leading South Dakota State. Was it, I think it was 19-0, right? Yeah. That very first game of the NIT, they're leading 19-0. And South Dakota State claws away and claws away and claws away. And then I want to say, either South Dakota State takes a lead or for sure they tie it. And I'm like, here we go again. There's like 4 minutes left or 6 minutes left. And Texas takes a timeout. And they come out of that timeout and Ramey plays some of the best on-ball defense that we've had this entire year. Like, he's just absolutely on it because South Dakota State has the point guard. The sophomore point guard has been playing well. And Ramey just plays terrific defense. And from that 4 or 5 minute mark of that, you know, with that much left to go in the second half against South Dakota State, all the way through the rest of the tournament, I think Texas has been tremendous defensively. And Colorado seemed to be kind of the culmination of that there in Austin of, all right, they played well against Xavier, even though Xavier had some pretty good players and had some matchup advantages over us on the interior. And then against Colorado, they just, like I said, once we took away their dribble drive and their screen game, they didn't have a whole lot to do. So it was fun to see us take advantage of an athleticism differential and to see our big men actually like play that not once or twice over a half, but every single time on the floor looking as good as we did defensively.
Yeah, I think I might make a minor caveat. Like, I agree for the most part with what you're saying, but I do think that there were defensive issues against Xavier, some of which I think, to your point, are a matchup issue. But the fact that one of their bigs went 10 of 12 from two says that there were some defensive issues there. They played a solid game defensively. I just don't think that they Xavier game, the output there matched what happened in the other games. Like, I think you're right for the Colorado game, for the TCU game, for that last portion of the South Dakota State game. But that Xavier game felt to me like a more, I don't want to say troubling, but a little more muddy on the defensive end.
Yeah. That's fair.
Well, here's something I've seen from a lot of people and heard from a lot of people, is that Colorado was the beginning of them, and by them I mean Texas, looking like they actually cared still. Would y'all agree?
No, I wouldn't agree, because I feel like they cared in all of the games in the NIT. Like, they don't go up 19-0 on South Dakota State if they don't give a shit. Like, they cared. I don't think the issue for Texas in the NIT has been one of motivation, in any of the games. So, maybe you could say they picked it up a level starting in Colorado from where they were, but it wasn't like, you know, you want to go see apathy, go look at what Alabama did in the first round of the NIT. Like, those guys were just sort of, they're like, they kind of tried, but kind of not. So yeah, I take a little issue with that. I mean, if you want to make a point that there was some sort of escalation in intensity starting with Colorado, okay. But I don't think they were phoning it in at any point.
Well, why do you think there was an escalation in intensity then, personally?
It's a good question. I don't have a good answer for that. I think that they have been bought in this entire NIT, which is frankly surprising to me, because they missed out on their main goal of the year of playing in the NCAAs. And if they're, you know, when you miss out on a major goal like that, the question is, how do you respond? And some teams will mail it in, some teams will not, you know, like when Texas went to the CBI that one year and got beat up by Houston, it was obvious they didn't give a damn about being there. So I think this team is obviously give a shit than they have for this entire tournament. Why they did better, or why it got, you know, a level higher against Colorado and then TCU, I don't know exactly. Maybe they finally kind of tasted the possibility of going and playing Madison Square Garden or something. It could be anything.
Well, it is, and I think that Johnny is accurate. I don't think that what he says is wrong. But I find,
thank God,
I do find what he had to say actually pretty particularly damning towards Shaka, because if you buy into that notion of, wow, did we really turn it up a notch against Colorado and even then ratchet up again against TCU. Like, I thought against TCU, what we did best, kind of unquestionably, was the most energy and intensity that we've seen out of this team. I don't know. I think it's been a few years, like at least since, I'm just not sure. I'm not sure when the last time I saw a Shaka defensive team play with that energy at Texas consistently. I mean, even over like a 10 or 15 minute stretch, I don't know that we've seen a whole lot of that. And I have this thing with basically every single class that I teach, right? So we have 7 periods every day in school, and I teach 6 of them. And sometime throughout the school year, sometimes even multiple times with each class, I say, you shouldn't have done that. You should not have shown me what you were capable of, because now that I know what you're capable of, I'm going to expect that. Like, if you did a great job on a project or these papers were really good, now I know that you are capable of that quality level of work. And what I saw in the TCU game defensively was so stinking good. Like, the intensity, that energy, the attention to detail, the absolute just resolute nature in which they would not give TCU anything. Like, that was awesome. That was awesome. If we had played defensively like that, even somewhat consistently, you figure that they could have won at least a handful more games. And that is so fucking frustrating. That's so frustrating. I don't want to see that shit against TCU in the NIT. Like I have, there were a handful of a number of games that they could have been way, way more into it defensively. And if they have that ability and we have not been able to coax that out of them, like that's incredibly damning, because that's what Shaka's like built his reputation on, is that ability to get teams to the level where they can bring that kind of energy and enthusiasm to the game. With Shaka, like there was never any real mistaking him for some kind of X's and O guru. And he's better systematically than I think a lot of people give him credit for. But the real reason to buy into Shaka when he first came here was like, hey, he's a young guy. He's a great communicator. He's detail-oriented. We think he can recruit. Like, this is exciting stuff. But what I think people would have been most excited about was his ability to get his players to play really hard, right? And like he can do that. He can bring that. And apparently they haven't been. Like when I saw them in the TCU game, it's like, oh, okay, I guess we haven't actually been playing hard at all. And so it's sort of like, all right, well then what has this been? Because I think one of the very consistent things that we've said is like, well, even though we've lost a bunch, we've lost close, we've played hard, like we've been in all these games, but then you watch the intensity like last night, and of course that's tough to recreate all the time, but that's been the fascinating thing about Texas Tech, is they defensively look like we looked last night every game. And I don't really want a coach here at Texas that just like only hangs their hat on that. But that looked like Texas Tech last night. That looked like a bunch of guys really dialed in, absolutely flying around defensively and making life miserable for their opponent.
So I had the hot take horn ready, and Johnny had the hot take horn also ready. But I don't know if that's so much of a hot take, Tim. You were billing it as a hot take, but I don't know how hot that is. I feel like that's
it's kind of spicy for Tim.
It's spicy. It is spicy, yeah, spicy. But I'm not, you know, it's like a crotater chips. You know what I'm talking about, Ms. Vicks?
No, I don't know.
Okay, so for those who haven't had crotater chips, they're pretty damn good. But also,
for the record, I wish y'all could see the look on his face when he says it, because he feels, Will feels that he looks like he knows he's about to introduce Pearl Jam to us for the first time. Like, he's got that kind of look like, oh yeah, here comes the good shit.
Crotato chips. So like the crawfish potato chips, they're pretty good. They got some good seasoning on them. They're sort of spicy, but they're not that spicy. They're you can consume them spicy without having a runny nose and red face.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So that's Tim's
I'll try to eat those and think of Tim's takes.
Not that hot, but still a little spicy.
All right.
Wait, okay, so guys, do you agree?
That was
a crotator
take right there.
I don't know, Tim. I haven't tried the chips. It's hard for me to say, I guess. Like I get where you're coming from.
Well, here, so if I can make it a little bit more succinct, I was more frustrated that we haven't seen that type of just that type of energy and effort consistently than I was happy to see that energy and effort.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that. I don't disagree. Like, I understand that the genesis of those feelings are perfectly valid to have. I don't think you're off base in being frustrated. I would love to see that sort of energy and intensity every single game too, if possible. I don't think I disagree with that. I guess, like right now for me, I'm more in this mind space of, well, this season's over, so I'm just gonna try and enjoy the good. It's when we're doing the postmortem and we look through it, yeah, that is absolutely something to talk about, and I would like to see that sort of intensity too. I guess sort of what I'm thinking is like, there have been games where they came out flat. Absolutely. Like the Oklahoma State game, the senior night against TCU, like they've had nights here and there where they definitely came out flat. What I don't know, and this is just my lack of experience in the coaching realm, is understanding how reasonable a request it is for a team in, like in the Big 12 or wherever, to put out that sort of effort every night if they have, like, if I feel like maybe Tech is a little more able to do that sort of thing because they have an older roster who probably has the legs for it, or they have the stamina for it, whereas like a younger roster might not be as capable of giving that night in and night out because they're just not, you know, they're still adding the strength, they're still adding, you know, stamina, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I guess for me, it's not that I think your request is wrong or unreasonable. It's that there are things about that question or dependencies on that question that I don't know the answer to. So I'm not as comfortable saying that kind of effort is something they could put out 35 games in a season. Maybe they could. It's, you know, and it's a, like I said, it's an entirely valid question to ask. I just don't know that I have an answer to whether or not that is something that is reasonable to ask.
Me neither. It just seemed like such an outlier as far as like, wow, like I was a little bit overwhelmed by how
where was this when you needed it to get into the NCAA tournament?
Sure.
That's the question.
Yeah.
You
were baffled. I guess so.
Where was this when we needed it? Why is it coming out now? Where has this been your entire career when it's supposed to be the thing that you built your career on? So,
well, and I mean, I guess I would say that some of it is like some of his teams have been really locked in defensively. Like last year's team was a very good defensive team. The year before was damn near elite, even as they were bad at a lot of other things. At least on the defensive end, that's been the problem. I can think the better question to, or maybe a parallel question to ask is, was the overall energy and effort significantly, like, was that an unreasonable amount? Because as much as they were completely locked in on defense, their offense was good, but it's been better this year. Like they were somewhat efficient, but they weren't finishing at the rim at the rate they needed to. They had some turnovers that they didn't really need to create. So like, I don't know that I would consider it as complete a game as I think you are considering it.
No, I totally agree. Yeah.
So then I guess the question, if I would modify it a little, is Texas going to, like, why can't Texas be that good defensively all season? And that's a fair question, especially from a coach who is known for his defensive abilities. And yeah, I mean, that's a valid criticism to have, is why can't they do that all the time on the defensive end?
It's funny. You're like, I don't have an answer for you.
Yeah, I don't. And so, you know, I am throwing words at the equation trying to solve it. It's a reasonable question.
So then let's go ahead and get past the TCU and Colorado games, because it doesn't sound like the revenge was so sweet. It sounds like it was more infuriating, and it caused the question of that every fan's been asking, where has this been this entire year? And we don't know. We can't answer that for y'all who are listening at all. We don't know.
It was plenty sweet. I was happy that the game played out like it did, with the exception of that, like, that 6-minute stretch where Kerwin had 2 turnovers and a missed layup and missed like 5 of 6 free throws. And then TCU got back to 5 points. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Sustain something decent, Kerwin. Sustain anything decent, Kerwin.
But let's go ahead and look forward in the tournament at Lipscomb.
Would you call it bittersweet?
I wouldn't, but I can think of someone who would.
Oh, who will?
No.
Why would I call it bittersweet? No. I don't get it.
Okay.
I'm confused by the
joke. All right, I'll have to answer that later.
Johnny, explain it to me, please.
Don't worry about it.
All right. Anyways, Lipscomb, a small, what is it, 29,000 student school in Nashville, Tennessee, has made it to the championship for the NIT.
I think it's 2,900.
Yeah, what I say?
Dude. Yeah,
29,000.
Oh yeah, it's definitely 2,900, not 29,000. that'd be a big school, but they are not a big school. Very tiny school in Nashville, Tennessee. So, who are they besides small, and what do they do well? And Johnny, you're just kind of going through the statistics. It's offense, isn't it?
Well, they're actually pretty good on both sides of the ball. They are extremely good on the offensive end. What I find most interesting about them is that they play at a very fast tempo. Not quite Grand Canyon or South Dakota State, but not far off. But they're also still really efficient. Whereas Grand Canyon, they were run it and chuck it as fast as you can. The only way to, yeah, the faster you shoot, the faster you get another possession. So with
what a philosophy.
It's basically the running horns in the early 90s. So they push tempo, but they are also very good with the ball. Like they don't turn it over very much. They're above average at not turning the ball over. They're not elite at it. They pass really well. Like they have an extremely high ratio of assisted field goal mix, way higher than most, which should tell you that not only are they running their offense in a coherent and efficient fashion, but they're not relying on one quick action. They have multiple options. They are very good at finding the open man, and that man is very good at hitting the open shot. So it's going to be an interesting test for Texas because they have a guy, Garrison Matthews, who is he is lighting up the NIT right now. Frankly, he's lit up a lot of people all year. I think he scored 44 against Wichita State, if I remember right. And he's the main reason they beat NC State a couple days prior or a week prior. There's another guy, one of their main guards, Kenny Cooper, who he has a very high assist rate. He's sort of like Robinson from TCU in that manner. They have a number of guys who can shoot the three. They don't shoot the three a ton. Like it's not above average the amount that they take or percentage that they take, but they do hit them at a high rate. So Texas is going to have to defend really well. Like they're going to have to bring a defensive effort like they did against TCU if they're going to slow these guys down. Because as much as Matthews gets the lion's share of the attention, he's not the only person who can hurt you. Texas is really going to have to work for offensive rebounds if they want any second chance points because Lipscomb is very good at grabbing defensive rebounds. So basically, for Texas to win this game, they need to play extremely coherent defense and stay on their men. And on the offensive end, they need to pick the right shots. And if they are not picking the right shots, they need to hit the glass hard so that they have a chance to get another shot.
Yeah, and just hope that Matthews doesn't get, on fire. So
yeah, he doesn't Desmond Bane us.
Yeah, when could that happen for Texas? Yeah, they're a team for whom an NIT championship would be a gigantic deal, right? That's a program that would obviously think of this as a wonderful step in the best of directions for their team. Particularly when you think about how close they were to beating Liberty in that conference championship game where it was back and forth down to the very end. And I think Liberty won their first round, right? I think Liberty, a team from their conference made it to the second round or third round or whatever it is of the tournament. But they're kind of one of those teams where on the one hand, they have a lot to play for, plus they've got a stud. So there's, Johnny knows much more than I do as far as the metrics, but I've been impressed with them. I thought they were good. I thought they were, they're dead in the water against Wichita State there towards the end. And obviously I think it was like an 18-0 run, something like that. They got stops when they needed it, and it was good. So yeah, we'll see. They certainly belong. Actually, their numbers as far as like their overall numbers are pretty comparable to ours. Although if you kind of take it together, ours are a little bit stronger. But yeah, it's not a fluke that they are where they are. So I'm thinking it's going to be a decent game, if nothing else.
how would y'all stop Lipscomb? If you're Shaka Smart and you're seeing this high-flying offense come out here, where do you put the bodies? What's the immediate importance? What's essential in stopping Lipscomb?
Well, I would say that, I mean, it starts with Matthews for good reason. And what you need to, I would honestly just face guard him the whole time. Give him like the Trae Young treatment. Like, you know, somebody else is going to have to beat us. Try and deny him the ball if at all possible.
Yeah.
With Kenny Cooper being as good with the, you know, he's very much a distributor. He scores, I mean, he does score, but he is more of a distributor than a scorer. And so I would say if you can combine some form of ball denial on Matthews and then sort of treat Kenny Cooper like you treated Alex Robinson last night, then that would be, I guess, the best approach. I would definitely not go zone against them. Of course, I saw them go zone against TCU, and I was just I just about screamed. Yeah, so that's what I would say. Try and face guard Matthews as best you can. Try and keep Cooper to as low an assist rate as possible.
And finish possessions. That was one thing. I want to say the very first defensive possession we had against TCU, Texas had four defenders in the lane, and then Sims just went up and actually snatched one with his head above the rim, like snatched the rebound. I was like, all right, okay, all right, this looks pretty good. Yeah. And we've been pretty good at that most of the tournament, I would say. So like any team that can chuck from three, you have to be careful about long rebounds. You have to be careful about them getting open looks on second chance points from the outside. Johnny's right. I think Wichita State, for the most part, did a good job of almost playing like a box and one. I mean, it wasn't necessarily that, but like the principles were pretty much the same. Like, all right, don't leave Matthews even for a second. Like, don't even bother what's going on with the rest of the play. Keep your back to it if you have to, but keep the ball out of his hands. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. But unfortunately for Wichita State, he got hot at the end, and that's kind of what it was.
He still scored 34 points.
Yeah, so he's at, 78 points over the last two games, I want to say.
Something like that, yeah.
Sounds ridiculous. Like he's pretty good. But something that's been interesting is Texas is, it seems like the rebounding has gotten better without Jackson Hayes, and it kind of makes sense. But it's having a guy out there like Jericho Sims, and I believe you made this point on an earlier show, Johnny, having a guy like Jericho Sims out there be the designated rebounded dude and let Dylan Osikowski not have to take over that responsibility has seemed to loosen up the team and allow the team to play more towards what they are designed to do.
Yeah, I think Sims, while Sims does not have the hands that Hayes does, so you can't run necessarily the same kind of lob actions that you can for Hayes. What he does a lot better is he plays better post defense in terms of low post actions, and he's a much better rebounder than Hayes. So with Sims in there, Osikowski does not have to camp out by the basket to get rebounds all game. He could still be down there if the situation calls for it, but it just allows for more roster flexibility. Like, you can actually rest Dio a little bit and have, you know, Liddell's taking some minutes where he can bring in some extra athleticism. And he's not a bad rebounder yet, you know, at this point. It just provides a lot more options. Yeah, so I'm in favor of Sims, what sort of his presence does for the flexibility of this roster.
Well, and Jericho is a much better ball screen defender than Jackson. And so we had a lot less, a ton less breakdowns off of ball screens. And so that puts us, I mean, to your point, Will, that puts us in a better situation defensively as far as rebounding too, because if we're not finding, you know, whether it's Liddell or Febris or Kerwin, if they're not having to recover to tough spaces because of the poor ball screen defense by our big, they can be in better situations to grab offense or to grab defensive rebounds. They can be in better situations to get a hand on some deflections, stuff like that. So Jericho, certainly has his limitations offensively, but defensively, I feel like it's been a huge positive for Texas to not have Jackson on the floor, just because of he's still, you know, Jackson is still figuring out how to be a big man in that kind of system. Like, if you know, obviously he has the hands of a guard. Jackson has the shooting stroke at the free throw line of a guard. He kind of understands some of that spacing like a guard would, but defensively he looks like a guy who has not defended a lot of ball screens from that position. And so Jericho is much more comfortable and has looked a lot better.
So then the best topic for last, or the one that fans are going to want to hear most for last, does this run in the NIT somewhat make up for what happened in the rest of the season, a 16-16 regular season? And that's the first part of this question. Win or lose tomorrow, that does it change how you feel about the season even a little bit? And the second part of the question is, has it changed the math for Shaka Smart at all, win or lose?
It can't. Either way, it can't. No, it cannot have undone the frustration of the season. This season is wildly, kind of horrendously frustrating. And again, maybe more so because of what happened last night against TCU. Like, this team had that in them and hasn't been able to do that. Does it change the mindset of you know, what Shaka's future holds at Texas? No, I don't think so either. He was going to come back next year pretty much no matter what. What it does for me, I think these last four games, you look at what seems to be kind of the unquestioned core of next year, and that's Sims at the five, Febris on the wing, Ramey and Coleman as kind of dual combo / point guards, and these games have really featured them. Kerwin and Dylan have been the leading scorers, but the people getting the big minutes are those four. The people kind of driving what we've been able to do have been those four. And I think that that's a lot to, you know, at this point, I feel much more comfortable with that than I did 3 weeks ago, or when we're walking off the floor against Kansas there in Kansas City. So what happens with Shaka? You know, I guess if something comes up and he leaves when we win or lose tomorrow, we'll see what happens. But look, A&M's going to hire Buzz Williams, right? That's going to happen. And I think Kelvin Sampson is staying at Houston. And I think, you know, obviously Baylor's looking good for next year. You know, like, there's still a lot of pressures, even just in the state. And Prohm is staying at Iowa State. And Kansas, I think, is obviously going to even be better. So there's still a lot of those external factors on Shaka's got to get it together, and he needs to win next year. But I do feel pretty confident in the core group coming back.
So I would say that it doesn't make me feel better about how the season went. No matter how this ends, it is still not the tournament that we expected them to be in this year. So winning an NIT championship does not remove this season from being a disappointment. However, what it has shown me is that it does not look like this team is on the verge of shattering apart. This, like, if Texas, let's say Texas, you know, maybe wins the TCU game on senior night or something, whatever they need to do to get in the NCAA tournament at 17-15 or 17-16, depending on how the math works out, and they get bounced in the first round. We all feel pretty shitty about what next year may hold just based on what we saw for the last year. Like, there's still a lot of potential in theory, but I'm not going to feel very good about the season and how many players are going to stick around and what, you know, sort of the you know, the foundation will have a lot of cracks. What this has shown me is that whether they succeed or not next year, the people that need to be bought in are still bought in and are still trying and are still attempting to make the best of the situation. And that goes for the coach, that goes for some of the main players, you know, even some of the guys who we haven't seen much of, like Liddell. Like, he's out there trying, even though he only played 10 minutes all regular season or whatever it was. So that is heartening in its way. I'm still not going to be happy about the season regardless of the championship, but the fact that they still give a damn means a lot in when I've seen a number of teams just stop giving a damn partway through the year, Texas or otherwise. As for does it change the math, the math of the guaranteed money does not change. The math of whether or not the Regents are willing to pay that sort of money to get Shaka to go has not changed. They are not. What may have changed, the math that may have changed, I think, would be Shaka's sort of internal calculus of the situation. I have no doubt that as the Big 12 tournament ended, as they lost to Kansas and their run in the Big 12 tournament ended, Shaka was as frustrated as the rest of us, if not more so. Because that guy just, frankly, he hasn't really ever dealt with failure. Like, he was very successful at VCU. He was successful as assistant coach elsewhere. You know, like he hasn't really dealt with this sort of situation. And I guarantee you he was very despondent and frustrated about the way the regular season ended, as we all were. So if there was a point in time in which he was receptive to moving on from Texas and finding another place, where whether it be UCLA or Virginia Tech or St. Joseph's or wherever, he was probably fairly open to it at that point, just at least considering the possibility. Well, now he's had 3 weeks of his team putting together really good practices. They've played really well in tournament games. They have the chance to hang an NIT banner in the drum, or add to the existing NIT championship banner in the drum. So he probably, I would not be surprised if he's sitting here saying, okay, well, now this works. I can make this work. If the math has changed anywhere, it's probably with Shaka himself. Whether he's ultimately successful or not, I don't know, but that would be the only place where things have changed.
And I'm going to try to draw some parallels between the Texas football team, the basketball team. The Texas Bowl is not something you, as a Longhorn fan, at least not the level that people should expect out of the Longhorn football program, you should be excited about. You should be like, hell yeah, we won a Texas Bowl. Beat Mizzou, middling Mizzou team. And, you know, ended off the year just above 500. But what it did do is it set up the next year where you won 10 games and you were able to beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. That's what this NIT is sort of setting up for Texas next year. Now, will Shaka Smart be able to capitalize on that? That's a question we don't know. But it's sort of setting up for Texas next year, and that's what you're saying, Johnny.
Yeah, I think the thing to consider is that if you look at the past NIT champions over the past few years, the record on this actually setting up to be something more is decidedly mixed. So I agree that it could. It's entirely incumbent upon Shaka and his staff to make that happen, because if he doesn't, this is a very different conversation a year from now. So I hope for his sake and for the players' sake that they do take this as a launch pad. I just don't, I'm not going to assume they'll do that.
Me neither. Me neither. Yeah. Tough to, I don't see how you could. I don't see how you could say with any definitive nature with that. What I would say is there's been a lot here the last couple of days and the last week or so, even talking about it last night on the ESPN broadcast, about how important Matt and Courtney are to the future of this team. And I think as Dylan and Kerwin step away, and we, for all the faults that they've had over the last couple of years, we have been able to rely on both of them to be, you know, two of the top three scorers for this team pretty consistently. and they will be gone. But I also think that over the last five games of the season, while they did not go how we wanted them to go, that was a bit of a trial by fire that allowed us to say, okay, let's see how they are going to actually respond to what does this team look like when it's theirs. And even though Kerwin has been the leading scorer in the tournament so far in the NIT for Texas, I think this team has pretty clearly been Courtney's and Matt's. And so that gives me hope and makes me feel like, all right, well, as with any season, could it end up crashing and burning next year for Shaka? It certainly could. History says it's going to. But I also feel that there's reason to hope that those two together, what they can bring, how I don't know about special, but how capable they could be as in that dual role of we can have multiple playmakers on the floor at the same time who know how to handle their business against even decent teams. That's an exciting and enticing thing to consider.
Plus Andrew Jones.
So one last question before we get off of here. There have been reports out there that Jay Lucas, the current Longhorn assistant, might be heading down the road to College Station. How big of a loss is that in y'all's eyes, if it happens?
Well, I mean, I guess the way I would put it is that I feel like it could potentially be a bigger net gain for A&M than it is a loss for Texas, because Buzz Williams, I assume he is effectively trying to use the Jay Lucas shortcut into the John Lucas pipeline of talent, which is sort of what Shaka did with Jay, and it's how I'm sure that's how Rick was using him at some as a GA as well. That is never a bad relationship to cultivate. I don't know. Buzz may be able to use that to short circuit things effectively and really kick up recruiting for A&M, in which case it will be very good for them. For Texas, they have the sort of recruiting ties at this point that I don't think any single assistant coach leaving would be disastrous for them. Jay has provided an important role. I think he recruited Jace, if I remember right. There's a couple other guys he was in on. So he has a decent eye for talent and he seems like a solid recruiter. But I feel like the rest of the staff, depending on who they replace him with, could soldier on just fine.
He makes a difference in the state of Texas without a doubt, both because of who he is and the background he has, and also, of course, because of his dad and the influence that John has. But I think this Texas staff is built to kind of recruit nationally in a bit of a different way. You know, I think Texas wants to kind of identify one or two key recruits inside of the state of Texas each year, which has been true. Like, you know, obviously that first year they got their first true year, it was Jared Allen and Andrew Jones and Jacob Young. But then
James Banks.
But James Banks was from out of state.
Right.
And then obviously Ramey's from out of state, but Febber's so I mean, like, it's gonna go back and forth. This is whereas I think Johnny hits it on the head that I could totally see, sort of like Kennedy tried to do for a while at A&M, I could totally see Buzz Williams taking five Texas kids every year. You know, and like they would recruit Texas super hard, and Jay was going to help them with that a lot. Whereas I don't think Shaka's recruiting system is going to say, well, oh my gosh, we're not going to lock down the state of Texas. Well, it hasn't happened yet. So I don't know why, you know, if Jay's here or not, that would make a huge difference. So I think it's a big loss. I do. I think it's a big loss recruiting wise. And I would not be surprised if there are some kids around the state that simply Jay being Jay has allowed them to get in the door But if they can find a piece where, okay, we have Horn, who is a terrific coach of big men, and we have Barry, who does a good job of, you know, as far as like helping out with the offense and can coach guards. If they can find someone else that really kind of rounds out that and can be a plus recruiter, even if it's nationally, they'll be okay at the very least. If our nervousness is, oh my gosh, the loss that Jay is recruiting wise, like if there's anything I'm not super concerned about with Shaka, it's recruiting. So,
okay. Well, I think that's going to end off here. Y'all, thank you for pretending we were football for the past hour. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Johnny Brashear, where can we find you?
On Twitter and Instagram at BitterWhiteGuy. That is, yeah, that's pretty much it. Yep.
Yeah. Nowhere else?
No, I'm sure I'm other places, but those are under much different names.
And as always, you guys can find him on Grindr. That's where I found him.
No, I'm on Bumble now. That's the new hotness. Yeah. Yeah, Grindr's yesterday's news.
Oh, okay. I haven't used Grindr for a little bit. I've since been taken. But Johnny.
Oh, you've been taken.
Johnny, where in the world is Mr. Timothy Preston?
So, as we all know, Tim is a very charitable soul. And he likes to help wherever he possibly can. So this week, starting on Friday, he's actually jetting off to Sierra Leone because he's going to deliver Lipscomb NIT Championship t-shirts to impoverished children because nobody on this side of the pond is going to need an NIT Lipscomb Championship t-shirt, bitches.
Tim. Beautiful.
Strange world design like foolish people do.
And Tim. Tim.
Yes.
Where can we find you other than Sierra Leone?
I'm sorry. Where now?
He wasn't even listening.
He was so in the moment of the music.
I'm a Congo guy. Everyone knows that. So at InsideTexas.com and on Twitter at InsideTexasHoop, no S. Awesome community at InsideTexas.com. Come hang out with us. But of course, there's somewhere else you can find me.
Well, is that the basketball court? And if so,
it
where?
Is.
Where on the basketball court can we find
well,
you?
Well, where I kind of exude the most, like I exude comfort around the perimeter.
And that's not just his fluffy exterior. That's his
no.
That's his confidence and
yeah,
his musk.
His musk. His
yeah,
smell.
And I saw. Yeah, I'm cash from outside. I'm really comfortable outside. But I'm probably a little bit more comfortable inside, probably most comfortable inside with the big boys. But where I really am absolutely the most comfortable is right in your fucking face.
Mm. Mm. Still has that crotator sting to it. But you guys.
Ooh, this is good. This is good.
But you guys can find us and our other shows right here on the Horns Cast. That's the Horns Cast on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean. Yes, Johnny, Podbean. Google Play. Anywhere you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Horns Cast. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Go get 'em, Horns.
Whee!
Bring home that blue ribbon.